pulls my towel off me as I go out the door, slams the door behind me, and of course, who comes down the corridor? Who's the least person you'd want to come down the corridor at that point?
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. And Colin Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ring Rose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ring Rose. Ring Rose is going here. What a score.
This is The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. We have a really good show today. I have James Downey, Mike McCarthy and Pat McCarry in studio, Ronan O'Gara, and we've got a nice interview coming up with Ulster winger Jacob Stockdale. But first, I think we have to start with this note. It's not often that we talk about some of the people behind the scenes, but we lost one this week. Lost to Leinster and especially Munster Rugby, the passing of Pat Garrity, their former media man. Rog, I'll go straight to you because you mentioned it one time before in the show. We were talking about the relationship between the players and the media, and you brought up Pat and you said he minded you.
I think a lot of us were incredibly close to him. He was, I had a look, 15 years, and I was there for a few more years, but that's an awful lot of time together, and the lads will tell you, I think, when you, especially in a good team like Munster, people get very, very tight, and Pat was kind of, obviously the media manager, what became his title in later years, but he was great crack. He was a good character. He was fun. There was an edge to him. And he had your back. And I think I said it at the time, I think even if you were 100% wrong, Pat backed you. He gave you a bollocking behind the scenes, but he always kind of backed you when it went against the press.
Pat, you mentioned to me off air that Pat Garrity was actually one of the people that got you, gave you a bit of help out earlier on in your career.
Yeah, one of the first. I was just working for a local paper, but looking to get into sports journalism properly, and I gave Pat a shout and made a big request with the first. I think I was looking for Jan de Villiers, and I was doing something for the Sunday Tribune, but Pat was sorted me out no bother, let me have as much time with Jan, and Jan was great for chatting, and that was it. You'd often heard that Pat would be kind of this guy who was fiercely protective of his players, but my access the very first time was easy, but when I went back to get future access in the future, it wasn't quite as easy, and I kind of came across that character who was just so protective of his players, and he'd give you a quick phone call if he saw something he didn't like, you'd know about it.
I got the phone call all right. Got it a couple of times. Probably deserved it as well, but.
But yeah, it was like, but even chatting to some of the other journalists yesterday, we were all down at a Leinster rugby thing there, down in Tullow, and he was just so fun. Like, the lads all had stories about him. They all got the phone calls, but the respect was really, really clear there with all the lads. And I think, yeah, he definitely will be like sorely missed by everybody.
James, you've played with a couple of clubs, a couple of media people around you. They're not all the same.
No, certainly not. And I think that when you see Pat and what he's done, and everyone speaks so highly of him as Pat's just done there, and Roger's done, and people have in the media over the last couple over yesterday. Look, I've had some ones where you kind of notice the media manager. For me, normally you shouldn't notice them at all, and you just kind of deal with them after a game, and that'd be it. Like, but if they're not great, you'd have no protection, and these questions would be coming firing, and you're looking left and right, going, "Can I answer this?" And
so, for those aspiring PR people out there, what should you not do when handling a player?
Just leave them, go in there and hand them the sheet with saying, "Do not say this," and that's the first thing that you come out and say with, and they go, "Oh, you're not supposed to say that." But look, it's for me, it's Pat epitomised all that, and about what was good about it, and he was in the background, but no one really kind of knew all the stuff he was doing to do it, and as Roger's saying, he was always there and having the social occasions and having a glass of red. And look, there's a hell of a lot of people out there that couldn't do 10% of the job that he's done. And sad loss.
Do you like media people, the handlers?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, these kind of guys become part of the furniture and teams, and you know, playing professional rugby, you have a really good culture. Everyone's like a family. So, you know, it's very sad when these things happen.
There's a bit of trust there that must develop, you know, because you are put in front of the spotlight the odd time, and you know, if you don't have the trust built up already with a journalist, for example, then the PR person is putting you out there. You need to trust them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they could hang you out there to dry, couldn't they? But no, they've got your back the whole time, and they advise you on what to say and what not to say, like Jimmy was saying. So, you know, you trust them wholeheartedly.
Hmm. I was looking back at a couple of pieces featuring Pat, and one came to mind. It was a piece that Alan Quinlan did after he retired, when he was talking about moving into retirement. And he encountered the other side of Pat when he was down. I think he was moving into working for Sky. And I was down watching training with the Sky fellas, and Pat comes over and says, "Right, how's it going?" And he says, "Yeah, it's grand." He says, "Well, are you media now or what?" He says, "Yeah, well, sorry, back off, closed session, you're not here anymore." But that's, you know, that's the edge that he had to have. He knew the line that had to be drawn there. And I think Quinlan, both in that piece originally, I think he did for a newspaper, he found that a little hard to deal with at the time. And I suppose we'll go into the retirement topic now, but things do change when you retire, James. I mean, you're not one of the lads anymore.
Yeah, and I think there's variances in how you actually retire, and how, like, I know Max retired differently to the way I did, and to the way Rog did, and to the way a lot of players do. No one gets that real. Or maybe Brian gets that big day out that, oh, it's going to be under the fanfare, and most players actually just slip off into the sunset and go unnoticed, and a lot of players actually just don't even take the field and get that last final hurrah, and you know it's your final game. And most of the time it's not, you don't know when it is, and look, it's very different for everyone, and it's about how you prepare as well, and certain elements you take into it along the way, and what you pick up. And obviously you want to retire on your own terms, but it's not always that case. But a lot of people are prepared for it. It's very highlighted nowadays in the media, and especially you see how certain players mentally are reacting to things. And obviously this is a huge topic in the sport now as well, a lot of mental health issues that players have when they retire. And not to be too morbid about the whole thing, look, it's completely understandable that players are struggle after a while, but not everyone does, and not everyone, some people are happy to do it, and some people pull out early. Like, I saw a great article before on with Cian Bohan, spoke extremely well about, look, he could have kept playing, he just didn't want to, you know, and just wanted to move on and get on with something else in his life and his career. And it takes balls to do that, and to actually hold up that hand and say, look, this is what I've trained, this is what I've always wanted to do, be a professional sportsman, and actually I don't want to do it anymore, and I want to get on with my life and do something different.
Raj, when you hung up the boots, I know James just mentioned the big day out, you know, the balloon over the Aviva Stadium and all that. Was that something that you wanted, or was that something you were saying, look, I'm not going to do that? What was your thoughts?
Do you know what? It never came into my head. It's never, ever. I didn't know. I just kind of, I can picture that my last game absolutely perfectly. I can see Nigel Owen, Donegal Ryan giving me a hug. I was there with my little boy. But I something just snapped inside me going, that's it, I think, you know. It just, I didn't know beforehand it was going to be my last game, but you just kind of felt right that it was kind of just, I just kind of had given it everything. It could have gone on, you know what I mean, as a squad player for maybe another year or two. Well, what's the point, as James said there previously? I just felt there was a stage where I want to get on to the next thing. I knew I wanted to go coaching. I knew I was interested in that side of the game and trying to get the best out of people. And at that stage, I felt it was right to go, but it wasn't pre-planned. It wasn't something I put mass thought into. And James, I think, spoke really well about it, because every player is very different, and every player has different feelings and different situations about how retirement comes about. But I think a lot of people find it difficult to accept that it's over. But you have to be very thankful for what happened too. You understand that you get a certain amount of years to play the game and give it your best shot, and then nothing lasts forever. That's it. You've got to accept that it's over and you're not that player. There's a new superstar now, there's a new person there, and it is hard for a while, but I think you've got to move on to something as opposed to retire. If you retire, you're always going to look back in the past. If you're saying I'm doing this, then I think you're three quarters of the way to moving on to the next chapter in your life, because you know what I mean, even the most hardcore professionals, well, bar Stringer and Dunners, it's 10 to 15 years is an incredible innings, but I think people have to accept reality and say this is it, I'm this doesn't last forever, but some people struggle with that.
So when you said you didn't know for sure it was going to be your last game, but something felt right at the time that it would be, you were already planning that, said I am going to be a coach after this.
I was planning for 2 or 3 years before that game, to be honest. That's why kind of the Irish setup was so interesting for me, Andy, in terms of, you know, being number one for a very long, long time, and then losing my place, regathering my place, getting back in for the World Cup, and then obviously people outside of the squad were kind of, well, why would he want to be, you know what I mean, a sub? I loved being a sub in the Irish team. It was fantastic because my, I suppose, insane mentality told me that I can have as much impact in 10 or 15 minutes than a guy can for 65 minutes. So that's what drove me. And I was always looking at squad players. I can remember, I didn't really have too many, well, Jimmy and Munster, I did with Mike and Ireland, connected a small, but I found it really interesting, the kind of squad players, the guys that weren't, like, I can remember, you know what I mean, Sean Cronin had retired 5 times after the internationals in the Aviva when he didn't get on. I'm packing this in, I'm jacking this in, I can't play this game, my head is wrecked, you know. And then you just said, Seanie, hold on a second now, just think about where you are and give it a little bit of thought, maybe we'll have a coffee tomorrow morning. And I love that role of trying to get the best out of the guys that were numbers 23 to 30, because essentially they decide how the team is going to go on the Saturday. If 23 to 30 are interested, you have a great chance of your first team winning at the weekend. If numbers 23 to 30 in the Irish squad are going through the motions and are happy to be a bib, the game is up for even the first team. You just get a cosy atmosphere, which is no good to a competitive environment.
Well, Mr. McCarthy, we've talked about someone who had the definite mindset, I am going to do this in retire, I'm already planning, this is what I want to be. It's March this year, you're looking to head to 2 years in Narbonne. South of France, French lessons are beginning. Come May, Elbow says no.
Yeah.
How did that feel?
Well, first of all, I think the biggest part of retiring is the worst part so far for me has been getting kicked out of the squad WhatsApp group. So that's been pretty bad. But I've done a little list here of things I do miss and things I don't miss. So I've put don't miss Dexter, body fat, monitored, soreness post-game, reviews, the pressure, zebra away. Things I miss, Dev, banter with the lads in the changing room, competing, big games, free food, free stash, doing what you love, and that schedule and routine. So that's I suppose what I am missing. But
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I put a bit of thought into it. So
Dev's down there twice, actually. I see.
Yeah. Dev's a big.
Yeah. But I had I injured my elbow in training, and it was worse than first thought. And I'd obviously signed to go to Narbonne for 2 years in the south of France, and I was hugely excited about it. And had handed my lease in, had sorted the removals out. I had Jamie Hagan was playing at Béziers, and he'd gone around to look at a house for me and, you know, video it and send it to me on WhatsApp and everything. So although I was an old fella at 35, and I was still hoping to get to, you know, like Rossi there, 37, although he's come out of retirement, hasn't he, and played Malahide.
New front row weapon.
Exactly. although I was getting old, it was still a little bit of a shock, because I hadn't really, you know, the next 2 years I planned to be playing.
Yeah, but it's for the family as well. You were taking everyone across, and how did that at home? You're getting home and said, "Sorry, it's done. We have to change the plans now." I mean, that's it's a bit of a hit.
Oh, it was a bit of a shock, yeah. But for a few weeks, I mean, we'd started our French lessons as well. We had a tutor coming around and stuff. So I just have to get on with it. And, you know, it's kind of sad to think that my last game was Scarlets at home without, you know, and I didn't even realise. But as Rog says, you know, like I had a few dark days to start with where, you know, I thought, oh, really, you know, I'm going to really miss it. And what am I going to do next? And has
that changed?
It has, as time's gone on. It has, yeah. I've started to realise, you know, like talking to Luke Fitzgerald last night, he retired at, 28, 29, and, you know, he obviously had a lot more to achieve in the game. So at least I was an old bugger, so it's not the end of the world, and I look back with very fond memories, and I've got James Downey here to mentor me in retirement. So.
but also I think, like, if we take the three of us here that have kind of played, like, I've gotten back into rugby, you're helping out with books, Rogers coaching. I think that plays a huge part as well in kind of dealing with things, I guess. But, like, you know, yeah, keeping that positivity and
Is that a comfort zone or is that an identity thing?
A bit of both, perhaps. You know, I do think that it's been such a huge part of personally my career, or obviously my life so far, like sport, team sports, be it rugby, be it Gaelic.
Yeah, because you're playing all the way through school from age.
Yeah, whatever. And then to suddenly kind of go right back, like, I really do take Roger's point in terms of, like, okay, he was happy to kind of, you move on, but, like, you're still involved in the sport, which for me is crucial. Like, you know, I was like, in my head I was like, okay, I'm going to finish and I'm going to go and work in an office and be in a bank and cut complete ties, and then kind of reality kind of hit in and said, actually, no, I can't, because that's such a huge part of my life, and I miss the banter in the dressing room. And look, some people can do it and cut it, but for me I love being involved and being involved in a team environment and getting back into WhatsApp groups.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Well, my missus thinks it's great for me to stay involved in some capacity, you know. So if you've done it for the last 17 years and then all of a sudden it just completely stops, you know, so at least I'm going, you know, coaching the lads on a Tuesday and a Thursday and off to Gary Owen on Saturday. So I'm really enjoying it. So it's been great for me.
Yeah, Rod, you'd wanted to come in there.
No, the moment has passed.
It's grand. So, James, what is it like moving from? I mean, there seemed to be a plan there when you retired. It was very clear you're moving into the quote, I think, financial services world or something like this. This is something you thought about.
It was towards the end. So, like, I had, you always have a plan. Well, maybe they don't, but I kind of had a plan, and you have, look, I was moving back to Ireland. I said, right, if I can do 4 years at Munster, then, you know, I'll plan and I'll be back home and everything, we can sort it out from then. So then did 2 years there and then obviously released there. So that kind of threw a huge span in the works and actually gave me the kind of kick up the ass to kind of get that impetus to move forward and actually go, well, actually, this can be taken away quite quickly. So in my head, the way I did it was kind of said I wasn't ready to finish in my own head. I wasn't ready to start work and I wanted to keep going. So I said, right, I'm going to give myself 2 years to actually make that transition. So in the back of my mind, rugby took a bit of a back step. And I was trying to use those 2 years to get as much information, knowledge as I could and worked my days off. And okay, club-wise, things changed a little bit, but it was good. I got to work in London and actually get into the city and try things. And I think advice, if I was giving advice to players still there, would be like, use your days off, that, like, you know, at the end
when use your days off wisely.
Exactly, mate, exactly, Paul. So look, just get on with it, like, and kind of get in and get that work experience done if you can. Like, I worked in investment management, sorry, it was a bit boring, but I do investment management and look, I realised I didn't want to do that, so at least I knew that rather than.
So it's what you're going in for, a day here, a day there, or shadowing someone.
Yeah, shadowing, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And then you kind of realise, well, no, that's not for me, or that is for me. And and it's about narrowing things down because.
And was this something that you did off your own bat, or was this something that the club was helping, or the players' union, or?
Bit of everything, to be honest. There's great support networks there. Players' Association, RPI, now are great, and in England, they're very, very strong as well. The RPA, so. They do help a lot, and clubs now in England. I know Worcester and WAS have player development managers there hired to help you and get make that relationship.
Rog, you were talking about the, you know, planning for the next move and stuff. So like after that game you played against Claremont and stuff, when did you kind of reach out to Racing, or when did Racing reach out to you?
Oh God, it was a surreal hour after that game. I walked in, I honestly was, my head was, if you can imagine, semi-final, which we, against the run of play, we probably could have won.
Could have won, yeah.
You know, the ball hopped in front of bloody Casey and he just missed it by a fraction. And I think if he got that, you know what I mean, we would have probably won the game. That's how close it was. So, obviously, you're dealing with a defeat. It was hugely disappointing. I went in and I actually met a buddy from school that I hadn't seen in about 20 years, so that was a bit strange. And then I went in and I met a guy from Claremont. Wondered would I come and play with them as a medical joker next season.
Jeez.
Straight off the bat, I was kind of going, where did this come out of? Then I met the president of Stade Francais and he kind of said to me, what are your plans for the future? He was watching the semi-final of the European Cup. I just said to Jess, who was with me, kind of going, isn't it weird the way it works? You kind of nothing ever in 2 years, and then all of a sudden you get two kind of weird approaches when you obviously haven't even retired from sports, you know. So that I think sums up how quickly things can change for players, or the options that are out there. And the Racing thing kind of came about because how did it come about in the start? It came about by just a phone call, really, kind of going from the two coaches in Cast were kind of moving from Castle on to there, and Lauren Beat were going to Racing, and I think they felt that they needed an international element, and that's where I came into. But I was kind of looking at just going straight to work with the academy. So I wasn't too sure whether I'd be interested in that. And then I spoke to them, and then it's kind of, I said, we'll see how it goes for the first 2 months. And then within 2 months, sure, it was in at the deep end, and it's stayed like that. So that's how that came about.
Had Munster said anything to you, Rog?
No, I didn't say anything to Munster. No, I knew for me, I wanted to get out of that environment. I just felt, obviously, not in a bad way, because it is so such a good place, but it's the place where I played all my life, and I knew that. And you know, James, I think from the coaching point of it, I don't think you can be yourself as much as you'd want. Well, sorry, I wasn't prepared to lose friendships with the players I played with. I have too much time for guys I play with that I kind of, if I was going the coaching route, I felt that, especially if you're deciding on a team and you're leaving guys out, like, players blame the coach, and they're right to blame the coach. We've all done that. But I think then when you become the coach, you kind of, you see it a little bit differently. So I think it was better just to park that aspect of my life and get away and see different cultures. That was all I wanted to do, really, was see how other people work.
Claremont. Claremont, if there was ever a club to go to in France, maybe for Rog for a year or so as a medical joker, Claremont would probably be a good spot, especially with the rivalry they had with Munster over the years. I would have liked to have seen it, but I'm happy where you ended up now, Rog. I think you're doing well for yourself.
You're just seeing the stories.
The door's always open at Buccaneers as well.
medical joker.
Yeah.
Narrow dogged.
Like, the great thing, you know what I mean? I suppose the massive frustration for me in France in my club is we don't have supporters. Going for a club where you have incredible supporters, world-renowned supporters in Thomond Park. Anyone around the world knows what a European Cup night is like there. And then you go to a Racing home game. And I think players, well, we all know the importance of supporters, but the public are not aware of how crucial a role supporters play. Like, so many times the supporters get the team over the line in close games, because it's who's going to break mentally first. If you've, you know what I mean, for example, a red and blue army from Claremont roaring at your players for 60-70 minutes, and you have a little pocket of Racing supporters, even the most mentally strong people will break with that kind of, I suppose, torrent of support against them. So,
do you think that cost you points?
I do. I most definitely do. I do. I just think there are games there. I think, what was the game at Town Park springs to mind, for example? Was it when Paulie and Cudmore got finbinned or sent off?
Yeah. Cudmore got a red, didn't he?
Even down to
the punch, yeah.
Down to 13, and Niall Ronan got a try. We had absolutely no right or anything like that to get anything out of that game. That was a really good team, but yes, it was the crowd that got us over the line.
James, have you ever played in front of some really, really small crowd?
Yeah, I think most of the lads have played in Murrayfield for those Edinburgh games, and you can hear the abuse, personalised abuse, but you can hear every call as well. It's like playing in a park, yeah. And then I've gone to the other spectrum of, obviously, as Rod said, when you're playing in a cauldron and you can't hear things. But yeah, there's nothing worse. I think Rod hit the nail on the head, but it's just mentally extremely tough to produce. I don't know, Mike, you've played in those games as well.
Yeah, it's like Zebra Away, or, you know, when I first started at Connacht in 2004, it was literally one man and his dog watching the game. So it's amazing to see where they've come to in terms of their crowds. But I was reading there about Reece Ruddock talking about creating your own energy, because when they played in South Africa against the Kings in that first game, obviously there was no crowd there whatsoever, massive stadium. And Reece was just saying, you know, it's hard to kind of find that energy, and you have to find it from yourself and generate it yourself, whereas when you are playing in front of that big crowd, it automatically does it for you.
Even if you're an away player, you get something off the atmosphere.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's what some of the goal kickers would say, wouldn't it? They find it actually stranger to go and play in Tolmount, where everybody just stays quiet. Like, it's actually some lads prefer getting the catcalls and the boos and stuff, because it's kind of what they're used to. But
yeah, it is. It's a great point. It's actually brilliant sometimes when you know you're going to a place and there's going to be no one for you, and you know what I mean, 40,000 people against you. That was like that. My last game in Montpellier, I remember it was. There was talk about Paul being suspended because he had the accident with Dave Kearney kicking, and he came out for the warm up, and the crowd erupted, abused him from high heavens, and that set the tone. But it gave us so much energy, and it was just like, oh yes, this is going to be a great day, because there's no better feeling, really. Kind of, I think the big players stand up away from home, and that's when you see a real depth of character in your teammate. And that was one of those days where it was just we got booed off the pitch, but like that brings its own pleasures too to rugby players.
But yeah, that's it. Like the that game at the weekend there, the Kings against Leinster, it was bizarre. Even just watch the highlights back, and you could just hear every shout and every noise and echoes around the place. And like, I don't know what happens over the next while. I hope Kings become a better team, but I hope to God that they find some fans.
Yeah, you're right. I saw that game live as well, and it left such a bad taste in the mouth. Mm. And you know what I mean, I'm not in the Pro 14 cycle, but it just. It was meant to be the showpiece, wasn't it? The South African first home game.
Mm.
And as you said, like the wide camera angles scanning the stadium, it was like, oh God, this is sad.
Yeah, that was one to push all the fans into one block of seats somewhere facing a camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they reckon the next game against the Cheetahs will be a bit better, because it's the Currie Cup games first. And then
a double header.
Then Leinster are playing Cheetahs, so it's a double header. And then obviously Cheetahs have got more Super Rugby players.
Out of interest, have you talked to any of the lads about how the tour is going down there?
I haven't actually. What I've been doing though is watching on Instagram lads' stories, and it's getting sick of looking at them. Of lads having coffees, swimming in the sea, playing golf, Table Mountain. I think they've been at the last few days. So,
James, do you reckon that is that a worry that we've started off with such a sparse crowd for that? I mean, Kings against Leinster should be, even though we're a little bit biased, a big fixture.
Should be, yeah, but I do think it's going to take an awful lot to to still produce the crowds down there, and they still take a lot more convincing. As Macca said there, you know, they've hopefully Cheetahs will pick up, and hopefully it'll start to bring the crowds in over the next while once they get a bit of buzz about it. I'm not sure how it's been marketed down there. I'd be interested to see that, but.
How is it working in terms of when the lads are saying the Cheetahs are playing the Curry Cup before what? Leinster played the Cheetahs. So what? There's two teams from the Cheetahs.
Yeah, they've a split squad. Yeah, exactly. They've a split squad while the Curry Cup is going on. So it's a bit of a complication that the Cheetahs have.
And who gets preference?
That's up to the Cheetahs,
like
it seems.
Who puts out the better team?
That's the big question.
Is it for the Curry Cup?
I think the Cheetahs, because the Cheetahs is more their super rugby team, and the Curry Cup's kind of. I'm not sure if I'm right here, but I think the Curry Cup is kind of like, below Super Rugby. Mm. So that's my thinking of where it would be at.
Depends which end of the season you're at as well.
ATM Cup or something over New Zealand, that kind of standard.
But you see that game in the Premiership as well. Falcons played Saracens in the USA, and that was a pretty disappointing crowd. 6,000, I think. So
yeah.
I mean, it's slightly better, but
in a massive stadium as well.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
It looked completely. It just. You know what I mean? It just didn't give the right.
No, you want to see
message.
Like if you're watching this on TV, you'd prefer to see a packed 10,000 stadium versus an empty 50,000 one. It just feels better. It looks better, and there's better energy coming through the speakers. You know, but I will say, right, to end on a more positive note, anyone go out there, look at the highlights of the Cheetah Zebra game, but make sure you get it with the South African commentator. Because it's brilliant. 59-37, whatever it was, and it's just, it's energy. It's good. Okay, the boys will be back later answering your Twitter questions. But up next, we hear from young Ulster winger Jacob Stockdale.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes. Passionate about sport.
Welcome back to The Hard Yards. Pat, you've been on the road this week.
Yeah, got out in the car and got on the Leinster team bus for a trip down to Tullow Rugby Club. That was for Leinster have announced a new 5-year sponsorship deal with, that was an extension of the deal with Bank of Ireland. So that's going to take them all the way up to 2023, the year we host the Rugby World Cup. So that
he
was good.
He says confidently.
Yeah, that was a good buzz. What is it? It was good. That was good down there because we were chatting to Sean O'Brien and Rob Kearney and Robbie Henshaw, and then Sophie Spence was there as well. So that was a good day yesterday. And the day before, I went up to Kingspan Stadium and was talking to Les Kiss and Jacob Stockdale, and had a good chat with Johnny Davis as well, their S&C coach. So it was good to get on the road and take the Hard Yards out across the country. Have to just get myself a Hard Yards sponsored Jeep now next. That's the next big move.
Yeah, Joe shaking his head. You're not getting a Jeep.
It's not going to happen yet.
No. But so you're talking to Jacob Stockdale. We've got the interview coming up.
Yeah.
What were you talking to him about?
Just spoke to him a little bit about his time. We made his Ireland debut during the summer. Like, this guy has come out of nowhere pretty quick, and just made his debut last season. And but he's already played 26 times for Ulster. Like, so they think a lot of the lad, and he can cover every position across the back line. So he's really good. Wants to kind of be a centre, but they're trying him out in the back three this season. And we spoke to him about Ireland. He actually spoke really well about Rog. He has a good little bit in this interview about Rog had a word with him before his debut against the USA. So, but I kicked off by talking to him about they've just come off a win against Scarlets, and maybe the boys thought they were going to go easy on them. But Les and John O'Gibbs have just ran the ass off him this week in training.
Me and Tommy, you were kind of joking there after training. Like, I think we need to go remind Jono and Kessie that we actually won. but you know, it's been a really good week, and it's been tough. But it's, you know, we've trained hard, and we feel like we're in, you know, a good place coming into the game of the weekend. I think there's maybe sometimes a little bit of a worry that you might get complacent. You know, after beating the champions and then going into, you know, a game where. But you know, we're more expected to win than last week, so I think they were kind of making sure that didn't happen.
Les was saying as well that, like, one of the good things for you coming back into the season and after making your Ireland debut was that you came back in good shape. Like, you know, you didn't, you know, those few weeks off, you didn't let yourself go or anything. You thought that was a good sign. Is it a tough thing to do? Like, surely you want to go celebrate after you've made your Ireland cap and, you know, go celebrate with your mates and you can finally let your hair down. Like, was there temptations to do that at all?
Yeah, I probably did to a certain extent. You know, you can kind of take maybe a week or two off, and then so we get 4 weeks off after tour, and then, you know, the second, you know, kind of 2 weeks, you kind of have to get back into a bit of training. I learned my lesson, so I did. Two pre-seasons ago, I didn't really do much training, and it really wasn't worth the fun. So I think, you know, for me, I find that, you know, coming in with a bit of fitness and a bit of training done, it makes pre-season, the start of pre-season, a lot easier.
Yeah. I remember there was an interview with Gary Ringrose last year, and he was saying one of the toughest things to do is be in those WhatsApp groups or Snapchat groups with your mates, because you're getting stuff on nights out when they're on nights out as well. Would you be in those kind of groups? Is there a tinge of jealousy when you're getting those type of messages?
Yeah, especially when, you know, all your mates are still students and just going out and, you know, are having fun and living the life of it, and you're sitting there having to get to bed about 10:30 because you're in training tomorrow. And, you know, you kind of say, like, you joke and say, like, oh, I'm jealous of you boys, like, but, you know, it's hard to be jealous when you're doing, you know, the thing that you love every week. And I know that a lot of my mates, you know, would pay to be in the position I am, so you kind of can't take it for granted too much, you know.
I was talking to Jonathan in there, and he was mentioning that you're from like a rugby mad family, and is it something that's kind of you grew up with? Is it it's a kind of, you know, it's something that they're kind of, they followed your whole career. There's probably scrapbooks about every cap and stuff like that. Is there rubbed off on you, I suppose, like this kind of family tradition of
A wee bit, yeah. So my dad, my granddad both played, and they're rugby crazy. Like my mom tells a story, I don't know how true it is, but that my dad was late to my sister's birth because he was down in the waiting room watching the sevens tournament that was on. So he's you know, my dad's always been rugby mad and had me playing you know, mini rugby since I was 4 or 5. So it's always been a massive part of our family, and, you know, I've loved it since I was no age, yeah.
What's the first, can you remember the first time you appeared in a newspaper or a local kind of cutting or, you know, school match report?
Yeah, I think it was after the school's cup, and I think we beat Ballymena, and I scored 2 tries, and they had some sort of play on words with Stockdale. I can't remember quite what it was, but it was a pretty weird experience, like, you know, seeing your name in the newspaper, but yeah, it was good.
And how did it feel then to be, not only to be called up with all the kind of new faces and stuff during the summer, but to all of a sudden be on tour with the likes of Simon Zeebo and Keith Earls? A strange experience. How was that kind of first couple of training sessions with the lads, and did anybody help you kind of get into the whole first few training sessions?
Yeah, it was strange, like, kind of, it's different. You know, when you come out to Ulster, and, you know, you kind of work your way slowly up through the ranks, and you kind of see more of certain players, you know, that you've grown up watching. But for that, it was very much, you know, I'd never talked to these guys before, and then all of a sudden I'm going on tour with them, and I've watched them, you know, play as I was growing up, and it was really good. It was a brilliant experience, and, you know, the likes actually of, like, Keith Earls and you know, Simon Zeebo, because they were, you know, in the same position as me, were, like, really brilliant, and just making sure that I had, you know, I knew everything I needed to know, and if I had any questions, they were more than helpful whenever I came to them.
And you mentioned that Felix and Roger, it was good working with them as well. Do you remember any kind of specific chats you had with them when you were over away during the summer over in Japan and America?
Yeah, I think, well, like, Felix was really helpful in terms of kind of, like, you know, high balls, and, you know, you know, getting into the air as a back three, because obviously, you know, he was, you know, brilliant at that during his career, and it was, you know, kind of really great to kind of pick his mind and, you know, like, understand, you know, what it is I need to be looking for when the ball's in the air. Rog is kind of probably a completely different, you know, style, and he kind of, the big part he helped me with was when I was first, you know, told I was going to be starting against USA, I was kind of sitting at the side of the pitch pretending to stretch, and just everything was going through my head, and what if I do this, what if I do that, what if I do this here. And Rog kind of just came over and was like, Jacob, you look like you're crapping yourself a bit. I was like, you know what, I am. And he was like, listen, don't worry, just, you know the stuff, and you don't realise you know it, but you do. And he was right, you know, once I got into the training session, it was grand, and, you know, everyone went swimmingly, so yeah.
And you were mentioning that there was the phone call back home, and yeah, just kind of letting the family know that you were there, but you didn't exactly go about it the simple A to B way, did you?
Yeah, because you know, I kind of knew whenever this, you know, what day and time the squad was going to be announced, and my mum had been texting me, you know, for about the last couple of days, being like, oh, have you heard? And I was like, right, well, I need to play with her a wee bit, so sent it as a family WhatsApp group, and just sent in bad news, guys, didn't say anything else, and my mum replied in this big essay about how, you know, it didn't matter, you know, I didn't need to be playing for Ireland yet, you know, maybe it was a wee bit too soon and all this here. And then kind of replied and said, that's all well and great, mum, but I actually got picked. she wasn't too happy for a while, but yeah, it was good.
And what happened to the destiny of that? Because I know you get like a jersey for playing in and an extra jersey as well when you play. Have you got both of them? Did you keep one of them or anything?
Keith Earls was pretty brilliant in that respect. Like, because I was going to go and swap my extra jersey with one of the USA players, and as I was walking out of the change rooms, or as he just said, here, Jacob, don't be swapping your first. And so he gave me his other one, and, you know, let me swap that as well. So I was able to hold on to my two first cap jerseys, which was, you know, really, really dead on of him. And, you know, I really, really appreciated it, yeah.
And is there a temptation when you get back then, hanging out with your mates, to show up in all the Ireland gear, in a jersey down at the gym or something?
I don't think the slagging that I'd get after that would be worth it, to be honest. A little bit, yeah, just to kind of rub it in their faces, but no, I think I'll just stick normal clothes for now.
Looking back, I was even looking at a picture from a schools game. I think it was maybe 3 years back against Methodist College. You were playing for Wallace High School, and still kind of had the big enough frame. Like, you always kind of had the height from maybe a few years back. But what's the kind of biggest challenge you found? Has it been just to kind of put on the muscle mass, and how much have you probably put on kilo wise in the last couple of years?
I think in terms of kind of putting on weight, I've never really struggled with that. My first kind of year out of school, I actually put on, I think it was like 14 or 15 kilos. So I went from about 93 to 107, and I was far too heavy at that point, so I had to strip back a wee bit. I think probably the biggest challenge I've found is probably not physically, it's like kind of mentally, and like understanding the game better and knowing where to be at the right time.
Yeah. I suppose the other one then is you got back, there was a big kind of camp in Carrington House then, and August. Were you down for that as well? And
yeah.
Did it feel all of a sudden, because you would have had a few maybe Lions back in the picture, they might not have been taking too much in part in the training, but all of a sudden you're next to some of the lads who are on the Lions tour that you probably would have been following during the summer as well.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, the tour was awesome, and, you know, I really, really enjoyed it, and it was a privilege to be a part of, but at the same time, you're kind of saying, okay, well, there's this guy, he's not here. So going down to that camp, it kind of felt like, right, this is where it gets serious. Mm-hmm. This is the proper Ireland team. Everybody's here, and yeah, it was great to be a part of it.
And they, I saw as well, there was one of the big things for the 2023. You were down at the Aviva Stadium, and Brian O'Driscoll was there, and maybe one of the other younger Irish lads was there as well. Yeah. But did you get a chance to have a chat with Brian at all? Or
it was me and Bill Johnson, the Munster half. Yeah, we went down there, and I think I showed up a wee bit late, and Bill and Brian were kind of already talking, and I just saw Bill because I was like, right, there's nobody here I know. I just saw Bill and wandered over, and then I kind of looked, and I was like, oh, that's Brian O'Driscoll, so it is. And then he was like, oh, hi, Jacob, and I was like, hi, I'm Jacob and Brian, and had a wee bit of a chat with him. So yeah, it was kind of weird mingling with the legends of Irish rugby, you could say. Yeah.
And the I suppose another thing is that, let's say I think you're 26 games in now, you're scoring tries, doing well, holding your own stuff. Is there another thing that the lads give you advice on, like, you know, if you need an agent, go here? The older lads good for that type of stuff?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of guys have been around for a long time, and they kind of know what works and what doesn't work. So, in terms of, you know, getting advice, they're brilliant in that respect, and there's never something that you can't ask them, or they won't, you know, help you out with.
And this is one that I suppose a lot of people ask, and it often kind of makes people jealous when they're reading it as well. The first Ireland game you remember watching, or first memory of an Ireland game that stands out for you?
I think the first Ireland game I really remember well was Ireland against England in the Aviva. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2011, and I think Ireland lost that day because Manu Tuilagi scored a try, so he did, to win it, and Yeah, I left a wee bit of a sour taste in my mouth. I thought I was maybe the bad, you know,
bad luck.
Yeah, but I'd say that was my first relevant memory of a game.
And would you often go with friends, or would it be family that you'd go along to games with? Was it still something that kind of be a nice memory when you were growing up?
Yeah, I think it would have mainly been my dad. You know, because he's such, you know, a bit of a rugby nut, and you know, always would have, like, we always would have come here, and you know, we had a season ticket for a year or two, and. Yeah, so it always would have been, you know, my dad that I would have gone with. And then, you know, maybe once I kind of got a bit older and, you know, was at, like, at school with, you know, with the kind of guys that would have played rugby, I would have gone with them. But yeah, it would have mainly been my dad.
And the I was even looking back at your own Twitter account and from when you were over in Japan there during the summer, just the chaos of the, you know, the 5 and 6 way crossways,
yeah,
and crossing the street. But did being over there give you a bit of a taste that, like, geez, I'd love to get back here, like, you know, it's only 2 years away.
Yeah, it's a very, very different place to Belfast, so it is, and I kind of love being over there. It's, you know, really good to kind of experience it, you know, something different, and, you know, like, a really vast contrast to our culture. And yeah, no, I'd love to be back. I'd love to go back and, you know, have the opportunity to play in the World Cup, because, I mean, you know, playing in the World Cup, that's, you know, the pinnacle of, you know, of... you know, international rugby. So yeah, and I'm very keen to hopefully get over there in 2019.
The last thing I was going to ask you about was Tommy was talking to us there last week, and he was saying that he hit his personal best meters per second. I think it was 9.7.
Yeah.
Anywhere is, are you anywhere near as good as that, or is he the fastest man in Ulster?
I think those numbers might be fabricated from Tommy there. Like, no. Yeah, I hit a 9.96 during the pre-season, which I'm counting as a 10, but a lot of boys are disputing that and saying that's only a 9.9, but yeah.
So we'll round it up. At 9.96, yeah, it sounds,
yeah,
like it's close.
That's what I'm saying, you round up, but yeah, boys are disputing it.
Perfect. Listen, all the best for the season ahead.
Cheers, Pat. Thanks.
Okay, so that was Jacob Stockdale. Pat, your impressions of him?
Yeah, really confident young lad, like, sure of himself, like, and just already, you kind of have... trepidation maybe when you're going to talk to somebody who's 21, 22, you might get yes or no answers, they might not be fully media trained or anything, but the way Stockdale carries himself, he's just confident, like, not in an arrogant way, just very sure of himself, and comes from a big rugby family. His dad and granddad both played as well, as he was mentioning there. So yeah, he's definitely a guy that I can see featuring in the November series, and you know maybe not against South Africa, but you can see him playing against Fiji and kind of pressing for a Six Nations spot next season.
Mm. And remember, for fantasy rugby fans, he's down there as a centre.
Yeah, yeah. And a centre, but picking up a try every second game.
On the wing, exactly. Right, we'll have your Twitter questions and tips for this weekend's rugby on the way.
The Hard Yards.
Now when the cups are decided, you're fine weather, but that's probably a 2-month period. You have to do the Hard Yards.
Hey, that's the name of the show.
Excuse the pun.
No, that's perfect. We're going to use that now.
I'm on a bonus for that, definitely. Yeah. Get that in.
The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards.
On Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
You're listening to the Hard Yards Rugby Podcast on Sports Joe. Thanks for listening today. We have Philip Condell from Ladbrokes on the phone, and our producer, Joe Harrington, is also here.
Hey, gents. How are you?
Very well.
Good.
How are you doing, guys?
Hey, Philip.
Yeah, so it's I was actually off last week, and before I left, it looked like Andy was going to run away with it, but after the last 2 weeks, it's pretty close. So last week, Andy got 5 picks out of 7 right, and Pat got 4. So that leaves it 17-14 heading into this weekend. So Pat, yeah, you must be happy with that, are you?
I'm starting to take it very seriously now. I thought I could just breeze through it at the start, and now I'm actually doing
thanks.
Know.
So I got into the lead because you weren't taking it seriously. Thanks very much.
Well, yeah, it's one of those kind of backhanded compliments.
It is, yeah.
And you did want to mention Treviso.
Yes. Oh, my big call from last week, that went pretty well.
Yeah.
Your banker as well.
Banker, and I'd say after being 14-0 up, Mr. Cockrell took that very well.
The smug look on Andy's face right now, if only you could see it. Philip, let's get stuck into it. So what do Ladbrokes have for Leinster Cheetahs in South Africa this weekend?
Oh, okay, so Leinster are favourites here. We've got Leinster 7-1 on, and the Cheese is 9-2. The handicap is 14, Leinster minus 14, and we feel this handicap is definitely going to change. The Cheetahs have two games on Friday night. They have won in the Currie Cup against the Pumas, and obviously then they've got Leinster in the Pro 14. And we have a feeling that the Cheetahs may prioritise the Pumas game this week, and if that happens, obviously team news is going to be crucial here. And if it does come to fruition that they prioritise this Pumas game, then this Leinster team should really have enough to waltz past the reserve Cheetah side, and every chance that this goes off much shorter than minus 14.
Yeah, like guys, you spoke about it with the lads as well about this like two games in one night for the Cheetahs. What about Leinster minus 14 though? Pat, we'll go to you first.
Ah, damn, I was hoping you'd go first, Andy. Yeah, it's I suppose the fact that you're talking about it so confidently that the price and those kind of odds will probably come down a little bit, Philip. But I just kind of think a 6-day turnaround for Leinster, same set of squad, same set of players. There might be a few changes. Should be a bit more of an atmosphere about it tonight as well. So I'm kind of reluctant, but I'm going to go like Leinster. I think I'm going to win, but I'll go with the Cheetahs for the spread on that one.
Andy,
I'll take the Leinster side of that one.
Damn it.
Great stuff. Moving on to Munster's game this weekend, they're away to Glasgow. What's it looking like, Philip?
Well, I think it looks like game of the round, to be honest with you guys. We're just talking about the Cheetahs, and the South African teams have definitely added a bit of flavour to the competition, but in terms of quality, sometimes it may be devalued the quality, and we're getting a lot more double figure handicaps every week, but luckily it's not the case in this one. It's a 3-point handicap. We've got Glasgow, the 3-point favourites, because they've got the home advantage. Match betting, they're 6-4 on Munster, 11-8.
Okay, Andy, we'll go to you first here. Artificial pitch and all that kind of stuff might come into play, but
yeah, and the Conor Murray game from last season, remember? All that fuss?
Attacking him when he was the standing leg.
No, but also, do you remember
the HIA concussion thing? Yeah,
they had their little sort of investigation afterwards, or whatever the appropriately lawyerly word is. but yeah, there was nothing wrong. I'm going to take the Glasgow side of this.
Yeah, I was thinking I'm going to do the same as well. I'm going to go Glasgow on this. And then just
I am looking forward to that game.
This is just to get a little shout out now, because we might not mention him elsewhere, but Jean Klein has been brilliant at the start of the season. So having my fantasy rugby team as well. So he's got, I think, 4 tries in 3 games and an assist already. So I'm expecting him just to batter some people at the weekend, but I still think I'm going to go with Glasgow.
Yeah, even the Munster started well.
They look
good. Yeah, you still think Glasgow?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think it'll be a tight game, but to go away and win 2 away games in a row, like, you wouldn't put it past them. But I'll go play it safe and go Glasgow.
Connacht and Cardiff in the Sports Ground. Philip, what sort of spread do you have in this?
Connacht 5-point favourites with a home advantage here. The Dragons beat a Connacht side last week, and they were missing a few, but really the Welsh side has started pretty badly this season, and other than the Scarlets, who've been okay, but again, Scarlets haven't beaten much. Connacht, we expect, will win this. Match betting, 2-1 on Connacht, Cardiff 13-8, and like I said, 5-point handicap, Connacht minus 5, Cardiff plus 5.
Andy?
Yeah, Connacht are winning this game, but that 5-point spread is very, very annoyingly on the mark. I'm going Cardiff on this.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I was going to go Connacht anyway, but this just makes it all the more interesting now. I don't know. I can see them winning it, but yeah, it's going to be tight.
Yeah,
it's going to be tight.
Yeah.
So you think minus size too much?
No, I'll go Connacht. I'll back Connacht for that.
Good stuff. And the other Irish province, Ulster.
Who gets the points if it's a 5-point win for Connacht, guys?
Type. See, this is where we need to think about this. We can move on to using the no draw handicap if we want to.
Okay.
Right. But we're not doing that today.
Yeah, I think it's complicated enough as it is, to be honest. Ulster v Dragons then. Philip, what do you have on this?
This is already only moving one way. Markets opened at minus 17. It's now out to minus 18. Ulster favourites, 20-1 on. Dragons 8-1, and they've been out now to 17-2. They really should have too much for the Dragons. you know, it's a tough place to go, and Ulster should have far too much quality here.
Ulster minus 18?
18 points are still a lot of points. But yeah, Ulster at home, I'm going with that.
Pat?
Ulster are going to win that one. There's talk of Dragons going, like, resting a few guys as well, but I don't know. Ulster, they win, but they never do things too easily at home, so I'm going to go with Dragons on that one.
Very good. Very quickly, let's get through the other games. Treviso Ospreys.
Treviso coming off a good win last week against Edinburgh, and they've covered the handicap the week before as well. They're outsiders here. They're 3-1 and 11 point handicap here. Ospreys minus 11, and they are 4-1 on in this game. Team news will be key, but we'll probably likely try and take on the Ospreys here. Treviso probably one of the better Italian sides of recent years.
Guys, what do you think?
I'm going to go Treviso on that one, but like again, I think Ospreys are my edge because of the talk of Reese Webb and Alwyn Jones coming back. But it's like 11 points, so I'm going to go with Treviso. They don't sound confident at all, but really, I'm going to go with Treviso. Yeah,
really nailing his.
I'm going Treviso again.
Two Trevisos, okay. Yep. The other games are Kings and Zebre.
The big one. That's the big game.
That's the big one. Yeah.
The blockbuster of the round, really, isn't it? I think we'll be with Zebre all the way here. Kings are favourites, and it seems to be a big spread for this game. They're 9-point favourites. Match betting, they are 7-2 on, with Zebre 11-4. It's hard to, you know, big up Zebre too much, given how they've gone throughout their history. But the Kings have been pretty poor as well, and it wasn't a strong Leinster side last week. We won quite easily. Mm. We'll be trying to take on the Kings here, and we'll probably be top price Kings all weekend here.
Yeah, I really gambled going with the Italian sides last week, and I'm doing it again. I don't see that. I don't like that 9 points for the Kings, and I'm going on the Zebre side of that.
Pat? Yeah, I'll go with Kings, and it'll be interesting to see how many fans show up to this game now at the weekend.
And the final game,
3,000 last week, wasn't it? So
allegedly.
It didn't even look like 3,000.
Allegedly,
it was pretty sparse. All right, final game of the weekend: Scarlets Edinburgh.
Edinburgh 6-1. It's a big price for Edinburgh, but two main reasons for that, and that's one, coming off their loss to Treviso last week, and also the Scarlets did look good against Ulster, and they might have just nicked the win. It was quite close in that game right up until the end. Pretty early in the season, and this game should show a bit of where both teams are. The spread of the game is Scarlets are minus 15, Edinburgh plus 15, match betting. As I said, Edinburgh 6-1, Scarlets 12-1 on.
Minus 15, Pat?
Yeah, Scarlets. I'll go with Scarlets for that one. It's a big, that's what we're kind of seeing, aren't we, a bit this season? Big point spreads, but I'll go with Scarlets and my boy, Johnny McNichol, to get the job done as well.
Yeah, and I get that. But if you've been beaten at home by Treviso,
having been out,
I with Cockerell there being Cockerell, I'm going on the Edinburgh side, but that could easily be a 30-point win for Scarlets, but I'm going the Edinburgh side.
Great stuff. We'll see how this plays out. Philip, thanks a million for your time, really appreciate it.
Cheers, Philip.
No problem, guys, enjoy the weekend.
Great stuff. Up next, we have Twitter questions for Mike, Raj and James.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
Okay, it's time for your Twitter questions now. People have been using the hashtag AskTHY on Twitter this week, and here are the best ones. First one, this is one we held over actually from Shane English. Saw a spiral kick for the first time in a long while in the New Zealand-Argentina game. Very effective and massive territory game. Is this skill a lost art? Raj.
Yeah, it's definitely been used less and less frequently, which is incredibly sad for me. I think for fans of rugby, it's for me.
Why has it been used less, Rog? Is it a safety first thing or what?
Well, I don't know where it's been taught, what countries around the world it's been coached. I think it is a difficult skill, but if you get it, it's actually very easy. But the problem is that people revert to the end over end when the pressure comes on, because there's way more margin for error. But the accuracy with a drill spiral is just, and flight time is far quicker, far accurate, and it most definitely is a dying art, unfortunately.
Yeah, I remember talking to Dave Allred about that a few years back for a piece, and he was happy to talk for a good solid half an hour just about getting players to do, to learn and to have confidence in to do a spiral right down into the corner. And he also reckoned that it was much harder to catch, Raj. Like, when you stick a high spiral in the air, it can be a horrible one for the player underneath. Mike's nodding. Right.
Oh yeah, but that is the hardest kick. That's you know what I mean. A spiral guardian is a different kick altogether. I'm only talking about the basic spiral kick, which really isn't difficult to perform. But unfortunately, I think all the young players nowadays are being told to kick the ball end over end, and I just ask why. Why, I just think...
Do you teach lads
that? For example,
that?
In a country like Ireland, where the grass is wet 8 months of the year, if you can get a good spiral, what happens when the ball hits the ground on an end-over-end? When the ball accelerates or hits the ground on a drill spiral, the ball accelerates. It's impossible to defend, irrespective of how good your 15 is. So if you can... I mean, drill a spiral 40, 50 yards, 30 yards from left to right, right to left, and it hits, and you find grass. It's just heaven for the forwards, you know.
Mike, how did that one kick you had in your Connacht career go for you?
Oh yeah, you're asking the wrong person about kicking, but I don't kick, full stop, but I kicked once in a Connacht game and it was pretty embarrassing, so that's all I'll say on that. Never kicked again since.
Can you remember, was it a spiral or an end over end? Or
it was a slice off the boot into touch.
Right, next question. From Colm O'Donoghue. In light of a certain Tullamans comment recently, what's the biggest disagreement or falling out you've had with a coach? So the context is, Sean O'Brien has come out fairly strongly about his feelings about some of the coaching and the structure of the Lions tour, particularly around week one and week three, and around Rob Howley's influence as backs coach, with perhaps Sean O'Brien feeling that Owen Farrell and Jonathan Sexton had to take over that, some of that. James, any view on this?
I've had a fair few disagreements with people. I guess I've tried to keep them as in-house as I could, but ultimately when you have to react to something, I guess you have to react to something. And
was there anywhere you completely lost the handle?
Yeah, there is, yeah. No, I threw my toys out of the pram a couple of times now. I remember with Glasgow, I was substituted at halftime, and he said, I missed two tackles or something. I said, well, someone else missed three or four, like, and he said, right, you're done. So I stood up and threw my gum shield on the floor, and that was it, like, and yeah. Wasn't too happy, but that was the beginning of the end, let's just say, on that one.
So that was you gone.
That was, well, yeah, but also me, myself, in my own head. I was like, right, time to move.
Not working out.
Yeah, but yeah.
Mike, are you surprised that Johnny's made comments like that?
Not necessarily. He's just speaking what he thinks, and
Johnny is a man who says what he thinks.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't said anything too bad. He's kind of said what he thinks they could have done better. Yeah. And he's got confidence that squad could have won the... I think he's saying they could have won the three tests. So, you know, fair play to him. I mean, it's surely sets very high standards, and he's a confident guy, so...
Yeah, and in fairness to him, he did say, look, it's the... He's talking about the structure, how they went into the first test and the third test. He said he admitted that they were probably lucky to win the second test. Raj, is this the sort of thing you'd expect Johnny to be very honest about at this point in his career?
I only saw snippets of it, unfortunately. You know what I mean? I think experience has told me to make sure I read this article because it seems really interesting. But For people that I know and respect, Sean O'Brien blew way up there. I think when he says something like this, you have to listen. He doesn't say it for the sake of it. He's saying it, as Mike said, to improve, I suppose, Northern Hemisphere rugby going forward. That's exactly why he's saying it, I would think. And he's earned the right to talk. He's a great leader. I think he's a great man in the dressing room. And he's someone's opinion I would really take heed of.
Going into that second test in Christchurch, or in Wellington, I should say, he had lost all seven tests he played against New Zealand, and he had missed out on the win over in Chicago. So he probably saw the lads that were around him and thought, we can fucking win this thing. Like, and I think that's probably why there's a bit of frustration there. You can sense it about him as well. He looks back and there's a bit of pride there, but he's just thinking, shit, we could have had them there.
Yeah, I suppose it's natural enough when you're looking back.
Are you just rubbing it in there, Pat? I played them about another 5 days and I still didn't win.
Here, I'm glad you mentioned it.
Before we go, the two lads beside me in the studio, you roomed together once, didn't you?
Oh, yes, we did.
How did that go?
Oh, I think that's why maybe I didn't perhaps get any more caps, because we toured USA and Canada the first week. It was just as Joe had come in the first week. Les Kiss was running the show for the first week, and then Joe came for the second week, and I was rooming with Jimmy, and I got out of the shower and just had my towel around me, went to go out the door into the corridor to put my bag of washing, you know, my dirty kit. There's like a big bucket at the end of the corridor you put your washing in. So I said, oh, Jimmy, being a good roommate, you got any kit you want me to put in the wash? So I took his kit bag, took my kit bag, had my towel around me, just nipped down the corridor to chuck it into the washing basket. What's Jimmy do? He pulls my towel off me as I go out the door, slams the door behind me, and of course, who comes down the corridor? Who's the least person you'd want to come down the corridor at that point is Joe Schmidt. Most pretty awkward scenario, standing out there with two kit bags, no towel. And seeing Joe getting closer and closer, and yeah, that was a very awkward moment for me.
Mr. Downey, you have a right of reply.
Yeah,
I apologise, Mike. I actually forgot.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to remind you till now, but yeah,
cheers.
Right, what a lovely moment to end on. Nice mental image. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
Right, use the hashtag AskTHY on Twitter if you want to ask a question next week. Also, there was a competition on Twitter this week for two tickets to Connacht's Guinness Pro 14 game with Cardiff Blues this weekend. The winner is Eamon Murray. Enjoy the game.
Woo!
Mike says enjoy the game. Thanks to Rog, to James, Mike, to Pat and Philip Kandel, to Joe Harrington for producing, and Emma Carroll was on sound. We'll be back next Thursday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.